Arenado!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock here has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk here, 710 ESPN Seattle and on 710sports.com. Whew. That game was awesome. I know they lost the game, and I know I'm supposed to come in mad and get upset and blame Pete and fire him or something and get a new quarterback and find a new defense. But, like, I just have so much fun. I know I'm not usually, like, silver lining moral victory guy, but, like,
that game was
a blast
to
watch.
Who is this?
That game was fun. I don't have high expectations. I don't think this team is, like, right there competing for the Super Bowl. I was in Vegas last week. They're 75-1 to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
People don't believe in this team. They're not supposed to win. They're not supposed to be dominant. And so when you watch them with a slightly different expectation level, Brock, A, that game was a blast to watch.
Yeah.
It really was just a fun, up-and-down, interesting, fascinating, good, physical, nasty football game to watch. It was cool watching the contrasting styles, right? Right. On one hand, you have the wide open Rams with all the different crazy things they do. And then the Seahawks just bam, hit you in the face, bam, hit you in the face, bam. I thought it was great. Right up until the point when they
yes,
lost.
Yes.
Like, it was an awesome game.
It was good.
Right,
you know what it was? It's a good morning. It's just not a great morning. It's one of those that leaves you, can you imagine the narrative and how much changes and how much national conversation and everything else? If you're 3-2 and, you know, you're still kind of the team, even though the Rams won it last year, you have been the team over the last decade. You have, you know, certainly turning and resetting, and it was good, and there was so much good in that game. So much unbelievable good getting back to your identity, yet it just wasn't great. And in some ways, in the last 90 seconds, too, it stole it from me, especially when he thought they were going to punt. Like, oh my gosh, this is going to be just epic. You're going to go down, and Russell's going to drive him down, and Seabass going to kick a 50-yarder into that end zone that's been such a pain for every kicker, and you're going to win this game.
Did you think they were going to punt, though? I mean, even as they were lining up to punt, they got Hecker over there. This, you know, this is the team. Fossil is the special team. Like, did you really think they were going to punt? Didn't part of you think that maybe Hecker was going to come up, take a snap, sneak, or something like that? And like,
all day.
Absolutely. Like, because punting wasn't the right move. It never was. It was never, I mean, you have a chance to get 6 inches to win the game, and if you don't get it, you can still win the game. I'm sorry. Like, it was...
I don't know, man. When the punt team's on the field, when
No. It's the Rams.
No, Johnny Hecker
right.
was on the field.
Another guy who can just I mean, like, I'm sorry. I was never...
You're not going to QB sneak at that moment with everything on the line right there.
You're
not with your punter. You were going to do it with your quarterback.
Your
you were not going to do that and ask your punter who never does that.
They don't ask their punter to
with their
passes.
Long snapper?
Yeah.
No.
Now, will he do some other kind of trick play? Maybe.
Maybe, yes. But they were not going to run a punter up with a long snapper against...
I would not have that believed defense. That punch yeah. was going to be in the air until the ball bounced off the guy's foot. I just didn't. And then ultimately, obviously, they decided to go for it. Seahawks couldn't stop it despite, you know, playing pretty well up front throughout much of the
game.
It
has been a while since I've had kind of the love-hate emotion I did yesterday. I mean, really, really torn. You know, last season there was so much frustration at times, even in many of the wins. You just didn't come away loving it. Man, did I ever love the bullying mentality. Man, did I ever love seeing Ndamukong Suh on his back. Man, did I ever love 190 rushing yards. And on 3rd and 1 and on 3rd and 4. And oh, by the way, in the red zone yet again, how about this touchdown from Mike Davis making a point?
1st and goal from the 6. A hand to Davis again. He scored through. He is in. Touchdown, Seahawks. Dave, you are right. This Rams defense hasn't been punched in the mouth like this season. And on this drive, the Seahawks, after the interception by Frank Clark, take advantage from 6 yards out and take the early lead, 6-0.
This season? How about in this matchup for 4 years? How about Aaron Donald and Quinn and Brockers and that crew laughing at you, embarrassing you, knocking your run back when you wanted to run last year down in the Coliseum? When you wanted to run the clock out and it's 1st and 10, you punted at 4th and 25. You could not run the ball against these guys for years. And yesterday, my gosh, between Chris Carson and Mike Davis in that plan, and Fluker and Sweezy and Britt and Effetti and Dwayne Brown, and those guys saying, enough of this, man. You are not going to embarrass us. And in fact, we're going to brawl, and we'll see whether or not you can do it for 60 minutes.
That was the first time since the Detroit playoff game a few years ago, when Thomas Rawls running for 100 and something yards, that I've seen their offensive line impose their will.
Yes.
It was the first time since that game. And by the way, that game was an aberration because they didn't do that throughout that season. It was the first time since then I have seen the Seahawks actually impose their will as a football team and as an offensive line. They did.
Yep.
And by the way, on those plays where they didn't impose their will and the Rams had something in the backfield, Carson found a way out of it and found a way to get positive yards out of it. That was probably the best running performance they've had, other than that Thomas Rawls game, since Marshawn.
Yeah, that Thomas Rawls game. Yes.
It actually looked like Seahawks football, Brock, and they made big plays in the passing game off play action. I believe they're connected. I know there are people out there who don't. It sure seemed like once the running game got going, the passing game was more effective because of it. The big plays, strikes to Lockett, the big plays to David Moore. This is the way you want this football team to. I know they didn't win. I know ultimately they didn't win the game. But isn't this what you want the Seahawks to look like for the first time in forever? What the entire offseason was all about?
Yeah.
It was about looking like this.
Yes,
and they finally did it.
As Coach would say, well, yes, Mike. But then unfortunately, your defense looked like something it's really not looked like under Pete Carroll.
But everybody's looked like that.
They have.
The
but many times, like the Rams defense is a feast or famine, right? Wade Phillips are going to be aggressive. Marcus Peters is going to gamble. They're going to, you know, guys at times are going to play a lot of man-to-man coverage. You played a lot of zone. Like, your defense is built to do what? Your defense is built to not give up the explosive play. And you're going to make them earn it. You're going to come up and you're going to whack them. And they did. And they knocked out two of their receivers, man, knocked them right out of that game. You know, Cup is out with a concussion and Cooks is out with a concussion. And that's what it's supposed to be, but not supposed to be 20 yards at a time. Not supposed to be. Where are you in your zones? Why are you biting so hard on that? Why are you not getting underneath that? Why are you continuing again and again? Then the number of missed tackles. I mean, that was Super Bowl Patriots-esque. So this love-hate pendulum here, right? The offense, you're just loving. This is the identity you have craved.
Right.
And you are actually bullying guys.
And without it, you're not in that game yesterday.
No chance.
By the way, nobody's really been in a game with her. You're the first team to push the Rams to the fourth quarter. Minnesota didn't do that last week. I mean, you are the first team to push the Rams to the fourth quarter. I know it's not great. I know we sound ridiculous sitting around saying, oh, they almost won, aren't we happy? But this Seahawks team is not. I mean, look, this isn't. What happened when this team had all their guys last year and they took on the Rams? How'd that look?
There were 34 points scored in the first half of the last two games at home. This year it was 17 aside versus just 34 for the Rams.
So I don't know. I'm not sitting here looking at it and saying, man, the Seahawks screwed this up and that was terrible. I'm looking at it, honestly, with as much hope as I've had. That was the best game they've played all season. That was the first time we've really seen this running game come alive and impose itself the way you want it to. That's the first time they seem to have had a plan for Aaron Donald and Dominican Sue and the rest of the guys on that Rams D-line. They actually had a plan.
Yep.
They actually looked like they knew what to do against them. And I know it all comes crashing down in the final, you know, couple of minutes and the holding. What a garbage holding call on DJ Fluker. I didn't like it. Pete didn't like it. Fluker didn't like it. I mean, that's just a come on. That's just football. And it's happening on every single play. But you know, that forces you out of field goal range. And the one thing the Rams can do is once you get into third and long, second and long, they open up.
Oh, no question about it.
And they tee off.
Yeah. You had opportunities. Your offense actually in this game, unlike for so many years, it was your defense that gave the offense opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. Your offense and your run game gave this defense opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. And unfortunately, with no pass rush, and unfortunately, Brandon Jackson and Jacob Martin thrust into a lot of snaps and rolls, man, it was going to be a difficult day.
Why can't the Seahawks do a quarterback sneak like that? Why is every other team perfectly capable of doing a quarterback sneak on third or fourth and short except the Seahawks?
Oh, and the Cowboys.
Well, they didn't even try.
Well, yeah, they did.
But they didn't even try. The Seahawks try, and for whatever reason, they can't do that. Let's see what you need to know.
need to know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Yeah, 33-31, the final yesterday as the Seahawks lose to the division rival Rams. Fall to 2-3 now on the season. Jared Goff's quarterback sneak on fourth and inches with 1:39 left to play sealed the victory for the Rams. Yeah, I'm mad that the Seahawks got into field goal position late and then took themselves out of it with a couple of horrible penalties. I wish that the offensive coordinator could, you know, send in a play on time. I wish they could have stopped the Rams on that final drive. I wish they could have stopped them on fourth and inches. I wish the Rams would have punted. But I'm more encouraged than I am discouraged after watching that game. I think you got a chance now to go to London, beat the Raiders, get to 3-3, and you put yourself in a pretty good spot for a wild card in an NFC that right now is wide open.
What do you want to be this year? What do you want to be? You want to be a run-first team? You want to be a bunch of bullies? You want to be a bunch of intimidators and go out and brawl for four quarters and lay it on the line and see what you got? That's what you want to be. That's why you made the coaching changes you made. That's why you made the personnel changes you made. That's why you made the commitment this entire offseason, and that identity came to life. Unfortunately, there's a lot of missing pieces defensively, and especially a pass rush against that crew, and if you don't have it, it's going to be difficult. In fact, Seattle had been 30-0 all time when they rushed 30 times in QB at a rating over 125. Both of those things happened. You were plus two in the turnover column. That happened against those guys yesterday. And because of it, it came down to the final 60 seconds. And they mauled you at the line. They got their 6 inches. And they went home 5-0. And you're sitting here at 2-3.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, maybe not the prettiest win ever for the Huskies, but they do finally get a win at the Rose Bowl against UCLA for the first time since 1995, 31-24, the final on Saturday late afternoon. But some good news, people ahead of them lose, including Oklahoma. And guess what? They're back to number 7 in the AP poll, so an opportunity, if they keep winning with a big one this weekend against Oregon, to do what they need to do to get back to the Final Four. Cougs, meanwhile, pull away from Oregon State in the second half. They win 56-37 on the road.
Yeah, it was a scrappy game. It leaves you scratching your head in a few different places here for the Huskies. Sivan Ahmed just continues to not be a factor. Miles Gaskin gets beat up in that game. Some question about his health and his availability, possibly for the biggest game in the Pac-12. Circle this one right now. This is the biggest and the most meaningful and really the only important game the whole rest of the way for Larry Scott's conference. If they have any shot in a playoff race, it is Washington down at Oregon. It's Blackledge. It's McDonough. It's the ABC 1230 crew. And they're going to have to play better than they did in the Rose Bowl. And frankly, their front seven the last 3 or 4 weeks, and without Mr. Bowman in the middle, they're going to get tested against one of the best offensive lines in the conference. And I had a Cougar friend of mine hit me this Saturday night. He said, between the Huskies, the Cougs and the Seahawks, which coach and which staff is doing the most to maximize their players' potential? Who is getting the absolute most of their players? I think there's a pretty good debate to be had with that Pirate in the Palouse sitting there at 5-1, that he may just be the one doing that.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Pretty cool scene on Friday night at Key Arena for the final event there as the Warriors take on the Kings in an NBA preseason game. The Warriors are better than the Kings.
Just a little bit.
Like a little better. Kevin Durant, though.
It was really close.
And Steve Kerr were the story. Durant wearing a Sean Kemp throwback for the pregame introductions, addressed the crowd, and said how important it is that the Sonics actually return to Seattle. Look, this is going to happen eventually. All the momentum is there. It's inside. It's outside. I mean, it's in here in Seattle. It's on the outside and the rest of the league. There just seems to be so much desire to make this happen. And with the right connections and the building now being built, I think as soon as the team's available, it's going to be here.
Yeah, and the number one crew out calling that game, Breen and Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy, and Van Gundy saying, just as Kevin Durant did on that microphone, the NBA has to come back here. You just have to look at this crowd. You have to look at this environment. It was an absolute who's who sitting on that sideline. Former NBA greats with Wilkins and Detlef Schrempf and Bill Russell to all the current stars, Bobby and Pete and Russell were all out there as well. It was quite a scene Friday night, put on quite a show. And yeah, good for you, Kevin Durant. You've done this for a decade in this NBA. You for some reason felt an attachment and a connection. Not for some reason, you know it. You know the lifeblood that is basketball in this town and what it's meant to this community. And it just poured out Friday night.
All right, those are three things you need to know. We do that every single morning right at 7:10. Sounds like there's some people who were a little upset about the timeout Pete called at the end of the game. Did you notice that?
There were a couple. There was one guy. Gosh, this guy was so fuming, man. Awful.
There are a lot of really mad Twitter. People yes. at Pete, so we're going to address that if you guys want to jump into it. At 7:30, we'll take some calls as well. 206-421-3776. Howdy can shout at clouds.
Is he going to talk to Pete, do you think?
Is Howdy?
Yeah, he's talked to Scott Service. Maybe he can interject in our interview.
I interfaced the music with Pete.
You did.
He's a very brave guy, so we'll see where that goes right after we talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
You want to take care of him? Take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, guys.
How are we doing today?
Real well. How about you?
I'm good, actually. I take a lot of silver linings and maybe even moral victories out of that one yesterday. I thought the Seahawks played a really good game.
I agree, 100%. I mean, really, which is interesting because I know all the criticism last week about the play calls and Brian Schottenheimer and Russell Wilson and that, they did basically what I thought they should do, run the ball. And by running the ball, you can see they scored 31 points, and they did it against a good defense. And so, in fact, I was just counting it up a second ago. I think they had 18 runs on first down, and they gained 95 yards on first down. Yeah, where everybody wanted them to be creative, have Russell run this and them do this and all this stuff. You hand off 18 times, you get 95 yards. Yeah, there was a fly sweep in there, but by establishing that type of identity, by working on the basics, on just trying to solve something that hadn't been solved in years, this is now the third game and the best running game they've had in a long time. Very important.
And what was the Rams sideline like? They had one little outburst. I don't know if you've seen the TV copy yet. They showed it after the touchdown, a little slant and go. David Moore, guys fighting, linebackers, corners. There seemed to be some bickering on that Rams sidelines. Did you get a sense for any of that?
Well, it was maybe one guy. It was Marcus Peters. Marcus was just livid. I mean, he was going crazy. And
he screwed everything up and he was a selfish diva his job?
I'm so sorry I keep getting toasted. Sorry I can't follow my man.
I mean, he did not. He had some struggles. I still think it's the calf injury to a certain degree. I mean, he doesn't look like he's running at full speed. And so, but boy, he was livid. And of course,
I got to say, if I couldn't run at full speed and I was an NFL starting cornerback, I feel like maybe I wouldn't take that many chances and I would try not to get beat deep.
That's a good idea.
I mean, that's just me. I'm no genius. I never played in the NFL. But if I were one of those people and I had that type of injury, that's what I would do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, he didn't adjust. I mean, he did not have a good game. But, he was absolutely livid. I know toward the end of that first drive, the first touchdown drive where Michael Davis got the touchdown, I mean, they were gassed on the defensive side. And Ndamukong Suh had to call and get relief and all that stuff. How about the one play on the touchdown where Ndamukong Suh was just pancaked by DJ Fluker.
355 pounds of fluke, just putting that man on his back. All right, in about 10 minutes or so, these phone lines are going to open up, JC, and I don't know if you're going to do it on your show today.
Yeah.
And in our studio, we've got one really, really fired up guy that thought Pete totally butchered and mismanaged the clock and should have never called timeout in the final 90 seconds right there. What do you think?
I think there's so much confusion. You want to make sure you get things right and all that. So, you call the timeout, but it wasn't going to make a difference. I mean, if you didn't get the stop, the timeout was meaningless. And unfortunately, they didn't get the stop. They got the fourth and one. The players talked Sean McVay into going for the fourth down. They went for the fourth down and they got it. Ball game over.
I guess the point being, John, had he not called timeout right there, had he not done it, and you've seen that punt unit on the field, were they going to punt the ball? Or because that timeout gave those players, gave McVay, gave everybody the opportunity to say, hey, don't do what's been done in the past. Do what we've got to do to win this game. That timeout changed that dynamic.
I don't think so. I mean, because they were going back and forth anyways. McVay's initial idea was to go out and punt, and of course, that's when he started to get the punting unit out there. But again, again, the players were still lingering out there trying to talk him into doing that. So there was kind of.
And I think
he
asked for the second measurement as well. I think that little detail came about. He wanted them to measure it again so he could buy more time, I think, to get all of that input.
Right.
But yeah, it's from an optic standpoint, I can totally understand why fans or folks are frustrated because you feel like, man, I got robbed the opportunity to see if Russell could do this one more time.
Yeah, but again, it's like the fact that they were in the game that late with the opportunity to do that. I mean, you know, the one that I thought was worse, again, I thought it was a good call on the DJ Fluker holding call. The Beto's tight. I mean, again, his arms kind of stretched around there, but that was the one that really kind of killed things because here they were driving down, they get back-to-back penalties, it takes them out of field goal position when they had the chance to win with that field goal.
John, the NFC's wide open, huh? I mean, just I watch these games, and every time you think the favorite, you know, all right, this is the favorite, and this team is going to... No, that team just gets beat again. Like, what's going on in the NFC?
Well, I mean, you got Atlanta can't play defense. Philadelphia's struggling with their offense, particularly their offensive line. That was supposed to be one of the strongest units in the game. You know, Green Bay looked terrible yesterday. They were down two wide receivers, and, you know, they end up having a horrible game, and the field goal kicker, Mason Crosby, misses five field goals. So that looked bad. But no, it's totally wide open. All the teams that you thought were going to be good with the exception of the Rams look very average to below average to bad. And so that's made everything wide open. That's why, you know, and so much of it still has to be the good quarterbacks in the NFC because, you know, you're going against a good quarterback every week. So that takes down your margin of victory. That's why I thought when the season started, there would be hard to get more than one team with 12 wins. I thought divisions now are going to be win by 10. The way it's looking right now, it could be 9.
And this Rams team, you buying them as a big, you know, watch them for 60 minutes. You think they've got enough to be 12, 13, 14 plus win team?
Yeah. I mean, I think they'll, because they still have some holes on defense. I mean, they've given up 62 points in the last two games to Minnesota and Seattle. But no, they're the best team by far in the NFC. I mean, the two best teams have a distance over everybody else. It's the Rams, it's the Kansas City Chiefs, and then hardly there's anybody else. I mean, that gap is so huge right now. Now, Kansas City's going through a stretch where they're going to play New England next week. A couple weeks, you got the Rams going against the Chiefs down in Mexico. But no, I think right now, I mean, these two teams are going to be running away with things.
John, we appreciate it. It's a fun day, I think, even though the Seahawks lost, because I got a lot of hope for where they're going now and what they if they found out about themselves in that game. I wonder if that'll be a turning point game for them, even though it's a loss. So enjoy your show today at 10 o'clock. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, thanks.
All right, John Clayton with us every single morning at 7:15. Brock, people are mad.
You want to release the Kraken a little?
Let's do that.
Let's do it.
Let's release the Kraken. 206-421-3776. I'm not mad at Pete Carroll for calling timeout. I think he did the right thing because of the time left on the clock, and it was the right way to play the time. But I think there is one play that will convince you otherwise, possibly. we'll hit you guys up on the phone lines. We'll give our take. We'll do it all together next here on Brock and Salk.
This hour of the Brock and Salk Show is brought to you by Mazda of Everett.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Well, it looked like it was going to be just fine. The Rams were going to punt. The Seahawks were going to get the ball back. Russell was going to do his thing. Janikowski was going to kick the game winner. And we were all going to go home happy. And then he called timeout. And then Sean McVay changed his mind. No, Sean, don't change your mind. Pump the ball. Don't go for it on 4th and 1. No Seahawks fan wanted to see him go for it because you knew that was the right thing to do. You knew it as soon as he was stopped short on 3rd down. I can't believe he even ever put the punt team out.
And while you love the muscle, man, you love the muscle of Fluker and Sweezy and Britt, you don't have that muscle inside right now. And Jaron Reed, bless his heart, took on an onslaught of 600 pounds and just got mowed, as did Bobby Wagner on that play. And it was, you know, it was going to be 6 inches they could easily gain. And, you know, it was their best against your weakest link right now, which unfortunately is your defense. Your best, your O-line, your run game, Chris Carson, the wild man, Russell Wilson dropping dimes and shots down the field. Your best went toe-to-toe with them right down to the final 90 seconds. But unfortunately, you know, on second thought or as they were continuing to make that decision, and I really believe they were contemplating it the whole time, even asking for the second measurement as the punt team was out there, and ultimately McVay trusted his guys. He trusted his players. He trusted his staff that said, listen, 6 inches with our strength on this crew, if we can't get this, we don't deserve to win. And I don't want to punt the ball back to Russell, who's got more game-winning touchdown drives in the fourth quarter and overtime than anybody. And I don't want to put Seabass out there, who's got more 50-yarders and did one just last week than anybody in the history of this league. We're going to trust our strength, and they did in the final minute.
Yeah, McVay said afterwards, we talk about attacking, and our guys, you can see they believe and wanted to go for it. And when you have your players believe, you want to put the trust in them, and they delivered. I mean, obviously, it means he's putting his trust in, you know, his offense and not his defense.
Yep.
But look, did Pete do this wrong? 90% of me says no, Pete did it right. In terms of the clock, he absolutely did it right. That is where you call timeout. I would rather call timeout to save the time on defense than on offense. When you're on defense, there's nothing you can do to stop the clock. They are going to run the full 40 seconds down right to the end, and then they're going to punt it away. So there's nothing you can do to change that at that point. If you have the ball, there's plenty of things you can do. You can run out of bounds. You can spike it. You can run up to the line of scrimmage and snap it after 10 seconds instead of 40. There's all kinds of different ways you can preserve time when you have the ball. When you don't, there's nothing you can do. You just have to wait and deal with it. So from a clock management perspective, Pete did 100% the right thing by calling time out there. There's not a doubt in my mind about that. Now, could he have called them before the two-minute warning?
Yes.
Yes, he probably should have.
And it would have been fourth down with 2 minutes to go, and would you have had more time?
Yeah,
yes.
Maybe that probably would have been the best way to do it, but he didn't do it that way. And once he got into that moment, he 100% did the right thing from a clock management perspective, calling timeout. There's one play in history that gives me pause. And Howdy, I don't know if this is where you're going with this, because I know you're
tweeting. Yes.
It's awful. It's awful. Everything is awful. Pete Carroll's an idiot. I know. It's awful. Is it because of the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Because the one thing you could argue, and by the way, I don't think I would say this, because I think it was the right thing to do, but is that Belichick, by not calling timeout, in that moment, second and goal from the one, confused everybody, sped up the game, and forced Pete and Bevel and the rest of that crew to make a decision without as much time to think about it.
Yeah. And they didn't have a timeout. They burned all three of theirs on the other side.
Rams had burned their timeouts.
They were out of options.
And at that point, they had thrown their... Now, I'm still not convinced they were going to punt it. I still think they were going to run a fake.
And if there were 15 seconds on the clock, there were 33 still when he called timeout. So there were still 10 to 15 seconds where McVay easily runs the O-line back on the field, that they were determining that. They weren't on the bench hanging out, helmets off. They were all, as Clayton said, mingling
there. They had all the time during the measurement. I mean, it really would not have been that challenging for him to run a little fire drill, get his team out there. Nope. And so I don't think it cost them the game. But that is the one argument I think has a little bit of merit. But did Pete get out-coached? No. Did Pete get embarrassed or do anything wrong? Absolutely not. And there have been plenty of times where I think they do. I don't think Pete's any great shakes at managing clocks in general, and I think they waste timeouts, and I think he's made mistakes like that in the past, but I don't think this was a mistake on Pete Carroll's part.
You're overthinking this. It was a bad decision. They were going to punt it. Because Pete Carroll called a timeout and gave them the space to plan, they changed that plan. They would have punted the ball, the Seahawks would have gotten it, and you would have had the best late comeback quarterback in the league with a timeout and a minute to go 60 yards.
I would agree with a lot of that, Howdy, had I not rewatched the final 90 seconds right there. Jared Goff never left the field. Okay, they were talking with Fossil while the punt team was there. The rest of the offense, as John just said, was right there. If it was that black and white and it was that clear and they were having their little orange slices on the bench because they were done and fully going to punt it, I can give you a little bit more merit to that. And frankly, it's why Coach Carroll in cut number 9 was a little confused about the whole thing in the press conference as he kept being asked about it. Yeah, he had to ask the crowd as to, where are you going with this?
Well, I'm not quite sure why you're asking that. You know, I don't know. We're just trying to keep as much time on the clock as possible. I might be missing what the point is that you guys are asking that. Because I see 1:39 on the clock, and it's going to run down to 1:06. You know, and so that's why we use the time.
I think the only reason people are asking is because obviously McVay changed his mind and brought the offense back in the final.
I mean, he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, I think Pete's philosophy is I'm paying attention to me. I'm not paying attention to them. If they want to go for it, great. I'm ready to try to stop it. If they,
I don't know.
I think that's how
I'm a little bit howdy on that one, though.
Yeah, I don't think
because I want the offense on the field. I don't want that defense on the field.
No.
I want the offense back on the field. Those guys on that side defensively who had a hard time stopping anything all day, as everybody has against
them. I don't
think
Pete can think that way. I think he's got to think, what do I do to give my team the best shot here, to give them as much time after he does what he's going to do?
If I'm worried about them rushing up and running a fourth down play with no time on the clock, the play clock left, and just surprising me, pulling the punt team off the field, I put 10 guys on the line of scrimmage in goal line defense.
But I don't think
one returner deep. That's
no, if they're
going to
run
it.
People off, you can run people back on. I don't think he's worried about all of that. I think the timeout is the right call from a clock perspective, and that's what's in Pete's head right there. How do I do the right thing from a clock perspective? And that is calling timeout in that spot. 206-421-3776. Let's grab Hayden, who's in Phoenix. He's listening here in the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Good morning, Hayden.
Hey, how's it going, guys? So I think what people really aren't focusing on here is that timeout. I know Bob Condotta tweeted this. What I was thinking live is that clock, it doesn't stop, or, you know, it doesn't stop after the measurement. So that timeout is either coming right before the measurement or it's right after. I think what happened is the ref screwed it up and kind of forgot that there was a timeout there in between measuring the...
Let me run through this because this became pretty clear. They called timeout before the measurement. Then they came out and did the measurement. After the measurement, their timeout is restored, and then they took it again.
Yeah.
That's the way that worked.
That's the nature. That's the law. That's down in the book right there.
Just the process.
You know, Howdy's got me at least thinking a little bit, though.
Well,
just a tiny little bit, and it's so easy now, right? It's so easy now. It reminds me of that of the movie where the guy landed the plane on the Hudson River, right? And watch it.
Sully.
It reminds me of Sully, okay? Because when the FAA came back and started to attack him and said, "You guys were wrong up there. You were wrong. You had time to turn it around." He was like, "What are you talking about? You think we're just robots and total machines here? We have to have some kind of human analysis right here. You have to give us 10 seconds, 30 seconds to think about what is going on as our engine just blew here." You know, conventional wisdom is you absolutely save those 33 seconds. You're 100% right. That's what you do. That's a conventional wisdom right there. But as you're there, maybe Tater's up in the booth. There's clock management guys like Pete. Put the pressure on them, right? They've burned their timeouts. Really put the pressure. You know, let's see what they're playing. A little chicken with them here for a few seconds because, you know, we don't need a minute 35. Russell could do this in 40 seconds.
Maybe.
You would love to have a minute.
Minute 35.
But you would love to maybe play a game of chicken.
We're not talking about a touchdown.
Yeah, you probably would have had 50 seconds by the time the punt. By the time the punt had had, you'd have 50 seconds and one timeout. I'd rather have a minute 25 and no timeout.
Maybe, but.
Stop it, Howdy. Like, you know that's going
to
happen.
That play happens and you lose the game.
Stop it. 206.
That's the only way you can lose the game on that play is to do that.
206-421-3776. Let's grab Eric, who's in Covington. Hi, Eric.
Guys, first-time caller. Love the show. But, Mike, I could not disagree with you anymore in this case. I've heard you say a million times, with 1 minute left, franchise quarterback, all you need is a field goal. You're
right.
Expecting to do that.
Yep, I do.
And that's the situation you would have had.
I know, but I'd still rather, from the metric standpoint, you'd rather have a minute and a half and no timeouts than a minute and one timeout.
But this is not a conventional situation. You have to understand. You're not playing against Buffalo or Jags who are going to be conservative. You're playing against the Rams, against McVay, who's young. He's going to go for it. Everybody can see that. He's on the sideline about to self-combust because he's pissed that he burned all his timeouts. You have him right where you want him. And you give him a free timeout. That just doesn't make any sense.
It makes sense from a clock perspective.
Yeah, and then Pete Carroll, after the game, what ticked me off, he's all like, why are you asking me this, as if he doesn't know. And he's all acting mad about the penalty that Fluker had. Please, Pete, you've had one of the least disciplined teams the whole time you're here. Don't act like you're mad about the penalty. You screwed up the clock, and that's what cost you the game.
He didn't screw up the clock. That's not true.
I would be careful about
that. He didn't screw up the clock.
Yeah.
If you want to make an argument he screwed up the human nature side of it, you might have a point.
Eric's
he didn't screw up the clock.
He's the man.
He didn't. He didn't screw up the
clock. Are you putting him in the top five, Howdy?
Don't act like you're mad about the penalty, Pete. Everybody knows you don't care.
How do you put him in the top five? That's a good call. There is a little gray. You're 100% right from the metric standpoint. The book is 100% right. You know what? And the book also says punt. And trust your defense right there if you're McVay.
Wow.
The top five.
And I just don't believe that.
And you know what? It is so easy to do that here. It's 7:40 on a Monday morning. It is so easy. Just like Soli, so easy for the flight people to look at that and not put yourself in that little moment, right? It's really easy to do that. There's a little bit of gray. I'll give you room for that, Howdy. There's a little bit more gray, but I certainly
am. It's awful. It's awful, 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 says Howdy. Like, come on. It's not awful. There's an argument to be made there, but it's 50-50 at best.
No,
it's not
you
awful.
You lost the game. It's awful.
All right. I'll tell you who was not awful. A guy Brock thought would be in the crosshairs yesterday. How'd he perform? That question, a couple more. Coors Light's Blue 42 next. I'm Brock and Saul.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for a little Coors Light's Blue 42. It's three football questions with Brock coming off a busy football weekend. Then we'll get to all of our takeaways here in about 15 minutes. Brock, let's start here. Question number one, Bradley McDougal has really become kind of the veteran presence at the back end for the Seahawks defense. Really challenging assignment against this Rams team. How'd he hold up?
Yeah, I thought he was the best defensive player yesterday for the Seahawks. He was by far the most consistent. I thought he was the surest tackler. Did not surprise me when that game ended. Who did Sean McVay go and find? Was it Bobby Wagner? Nope, who had a really rough game. Was it Tedrick Thompson or Justin Coleman or any of the D linemen or Frank Clark? Nope. He walked over and he gave a little fist pound and a little tap on the head to Bradley McDougal because he knows the burden of responsibility on a strong safety in their scheme against that team, and Bradley more than held their own, including this big play down near the goal line.
Return hand to Gurley. He's hit in the backfield. He's going to lose 4 yards, maybe five. There was a host of Seahawks there. Griffin was there. Bradley McDougal was there. A loss of three.
Yeah, and some of the other guys, if Shaquille or Coleman or Bobby or Mo Alexander, or if they could have played and elevated themselves to McDougal's level, they're off the field. Or at least they're holding them to some field goals and not just touchdown after touchdown after touchdown after touchdown and conversion after conversion when they really needed it. Yeah, McDougal stepped up big time.
All right, question number two. So much zone read in this game. It felt like almost all of their big runs came out of zone read, and none of them with Russell keeping. Why so much zone read?
Yeah, I think there were two things involved in that. Number one, most of it was out of that 3-by-1 set. A lot of trips action, so you're spreading the box. Number two, because you felt good about Fluker and Sweezy, just being able to withstand some of the movement and penetration. Those guys are just walls, and especially Fluker, right? And Ifedi, for that matter. And that 3 technique, or that 5 technique, or that 4-eye or whatever it was, it would often just get so much penetration back there and make that whole read action impossible. Not the case. They were just mowing them down no matter who it was, whether it was Sue or Donald or Brockers. Those guys did a phenomenal job blocking down in their one-on-one blocks. And then I think lastly, too, that defense and Wade Phillips wants to dictate. They want to tell you what to do. They want to dictate by all this press and pressure that you're going to check and you're going to get to this and you're going to do this check to that and you're going to try to throw this one-on-one fade or whatever. And that call is like, no, you're not going to dictate. In fact, we're going to dictate because this is the one play where we get a little half-man advantage. Right, and you know, if you've got to account for Russell, even if he didn't keep it one time, you've got to at least account for him. You know what that leads to? Arm tackles. And how many different times did you see that support guy come in from the side, and he's got arm tackle? And when you got Mike Davis and Chris Carson running the way they were running, they ran right through those arm tackles. Marshawn made a living on that. You want to do the zone read? You want to have that edge guy? That guy's unblocked, and he's got a read in between Russell and Marshawn, and you're going to arm tackle that monster? No chance. And, man, that was successful for him yesterday.
Are you ready to see Marshawn on Sunday?
Well, he didn't get the ball 4th and 1.
I know.
A little upset about that.
A little upset. All right, question number three.
I'm not ready for that conversation.
No?
We got a lot to finish up.
We got a whole week to lead up to that.
Yes.
Hey, so everyone talking about the way that final series ended with the timeout and then the 4th and 1 quarterback sneak. What led to it?
There's two plays and nobody is talking about. Everyone wants to focus on just the last one. There were two significant plays. Number one is Michael Dixon's punt. And, you know, that was the style. Pete was asked about it after the game, and they were going to go to, I guess, out of his nine pitches. That's the one that they wanted, just kind of whatever they deemed that ball, which was going to be kind of a little bit of a roller and try to get rolling action out of it. But to punt it to the 21 there was a severe disappointment. We watched that guy in the preseason, and in Minnesota in particular, Coffin Corner. We asked whether or not he could control the spin as he's knocking that ball repeatedly out at the five-yard line. If the Rams had to start that drive inside their own five-yard line, guess what they're not going to do on fourth and one at the 15 or fourth and 6 inches? They're not going to do it. But instead, they got to start at the 21, and then the second big play was the first down run. And you could watch, they showed Pete Carroll, and you saw him. He knew at that moment, like, oh, man, you just can't give. Now they're at the 32-yard line, and guess what happens? When you're at the 41-yard line, you can then go for it when it's 6 inches to go. Those were two enormous plays, a really below-average punt and a first-down run where Bobby shot a gap, where they were misaligned, where they weren't sound in their fit on the side away from it, and allowed that 11-yard run. Two big ones that set the whole dominoes to fall in the way they did.
All right, there you go. That is today's Coors Light's Blue 42. Of course, we do that every single morning at 7:45.
Now, is that a 56-yard punt with the hang? Like, that's just insane.
That was nuts.
Yeah, absolutely, and because it doesn't even look like he mishit it. Like, yeah, he's short-legged on it, but he just blasted it, and that's just unfortunate. You really wanted them inside the 10 and inside the 5 with that noise of that. Oh gosh, darn it! Just didn't happen, unfortunately.
Sure didn't, and you know, now we're sitting here talking about a loss. But yet, I don't know. I'm encouraged. How do, with all your anger, Pete, at the end, are you encouraged by the game?
Oh, yeah, the offense looks awesome.
I mean, like, that's the way you want this Seahawks team to look, and it's really for the first time in forever that it felt like they have the right kind of team to do what it is they want to do and go impose your will. So, I don't know, maybe I'm just a little bit more, I just have more grace on that. As we said, with this team this year, I've got more grace than I'm accustomed to, and there'll probably be some other week where I'll come in here as mad as Howdy is today, but it's not this time. I just think it's all overshadowed by how well they played, especially offensively throughout that game. We got a full slate of takeaways for those things and more next here on Brock and Salk.